F1, number 32A.
Many, many, many. Each one of us will come across in our lives many, many times where we are treated unjustly, where no human justice is given to us. Every one of us. If we can't handle that, well, the locusts just come and eat us up. It is because we want God to be humanly just, because we want that God is fighting out the human justice and not the divine justice. And the divine justice is so much bigger than human justice, and it's bringing about such a bigger solution than human justice, that we should gladly give up all the human justice, asking for human justice. Give it up. No more resist to give it up. Because only that which is truth is just. And that judge will judge error by itself. That judge, so often when I have to help somebody who has a court case or anything has to do with the court, with law, see, I always feel that it's one of the toughest things to handle with a patient, because no one goes to the court except he feels he's right to what he goes. And then naturally, because he goes to the court, because he feels right, therefore he wants that the judges will give him right. And Christian Science has to help him to give him right. You see, it's right from the beginning, it's wrong. The whole thing is right from the beginning wrong. Right from the beginning. Yes. Let's work out divine justice. See, sometimes it may be the best thing that can happen to us if we are treated unjustly. That's the best thing I think that can happen. Because only then we can mellow down and give up our pride and give up our own sense of good and self-righteousness and become tender and more gracious and more merciful and bigger. Where we just see, well, what does it matter what the human mind says and what is right and wrong? Well, what does it matter? As long as I can see that truth is always right. And all I need to know is to work out is that I am one with truth and in the rhythm of truth and one with truth and go with truth and be a messenger of truth and be a representative of truth. I stop with Jonah, see, and I would just have to add the last tone where we begin to see that because in being there is a fact which we symbolize as love, namely as that idea that God never loses sight of its loveliness, never without its manifestation and its object. And because there is a Christ about that fact, that love always comes to each one of us and translates every resistance to accept that fact of love and of mercy and translates it out of itself to the point where the human mind capitulates and accepts it. Jonah has only shown that proposition, and Micah takes the thread and shows that in that moment that resistance within us is broken. At that moment, when that light has come where any resistance to go back to God is broken, that then the way is free, the way is open, that the true idea can develop. and that's Micah. And so we begin to see in Micah that daughter of Israel, to which comes the counselor, on which is the crown, and which has the rod, and that the true sense of man is being born. So that the Reformation is now demonstrated through Micah. Micah is one of those wonderful prophets which show to the practitioner, which says to the practitioner, be careful, don't be discouraged if that whole situation just doesn't show itself in the first moment, instantaneously. Don't be bothered about it. The working out may be a time process, may have to put away first various misconceptions, but the moment the Christ has touched mentality, and mentality has begun to hearken and to listen to the fact that Samaria has to be brought down, that the walls of Jerusalem have to go into ruin, that error has to go into captivity. See, the moment that resistance in the patient is broken, where he says, I don't want to be reformed, the other should change. In Micah it is shown that at that point when mind touches the light of mind in the patient, where the patient begins to hearken and to hear and to be aware that error has to crumble away, that then we have won the battle. That then the Christ develops in that little seed, develops just like in a sheep coat, within the sheep coat, a strength gathers and gathers until one sheep just breaks through and goes the way of unfoldment. Where we begin to see that the Spirit has a Christ, and therefore take that little thought which has awakened something in the patient and strengthens it and develops it until it gathers enough power and enough strength and enough vitality to break through the limitations. And then he shows in soul, you see, that we can be very certain, because soul has a Christ, and because it translates itself to that patient who has been willing to hearken and has got some hope and some strength, that he will gather that inward integrity which begins to rebuke the sins of Israel, begins to refute that which is not right in himself. So that principle then has a chance to come in and say, principle as a Christ, and comes to that enlightened thought, that thought which is willing and has become strong and already got that integrity of sinlessness, and begins to see that it has all the authority of God within itself. Is there no king in thee? Is there no counselor in thee? Thus, and he begins to realize that he has that scepter, that power which also principle has, and feels one with principle, and feels that he can govern with principle, and so life comes and says, yes, that gives a new sense of life. That is the Savior within you, and shows how from the Bethlehem Ephrathah, from the house of that fruit, from that fruitful house, from that house of bread which is fruitful, that's the translation of Bethlehem Ephrathah, that in that consciousness there is multiplication, that it has in itself the life power which can break down the Assyrians when they try to come in. And so truth gives then in Micah that sense that this Savior will just save any situation, that it will re-establish man, that it will bring him back to his status of being. And then, in love, that final touch, that which has been planted into the ground can never be taken away, that it is eternal, that it is as of the days of old. So, what Micah will tell us really, you see, is this, that once we have seen the law of Jonah and have seen that the Christ has the power to translate every resisting argument back into the acceptance of the Christ and of God's standpoint, that then the working out of it is Micah, and then the working out of it is empowered with the Christ power, that the Christ mind begins to bring light to the situation, begins to enlighten everything, that the Christ spirit strengthens it, that the Christ soul gives it enough integrity to refute error, that the Christ principle gives to every idea the kingship, the authority, that the life idea gives to every idea the quality of ruling anew and afresh in the universe, of always being able to draw from an everlasting source, from the house of bread, to ever draw from it and ever draw from it, and so that truth is therefore establishing the manhood of everybody, the true manhood of the patient, until he finds himself established as in the days of old, as from everlasting. So you can see how Micah is one of the finest prophets, the finest message really, because it's the daughter of Zion that has the patience and the loveliness to bring every idea to fulfillment. Now, you can also see, say, if we look back over Obadiah, Jonah, and Micah, which are all under that big heading of the reformatory power of the Christ, which says, I want to reform man. And how does he do it? You see, by first pulling down the first degree, Esau, in Obadiah, then weakening that first degree so that there is possibility of development as Jonah. Jonah is called the dove, or hope and faith, the second degree. And then in Micah, you see, it's the working out of the third degree of wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, holiness. They nearly fit to the point into those seven subjects. So that whole second triad is a very clear illustration of how that reformation of man takes place through the translation of mortal mind by pulling down false beliefs as the Esau in Obadiah, then in the second degree, you see, as bringing forth a hopeful and faith, a state of hope and faith, where something is just lifted up again, and then really the solution of it, the real appearing of a reformed man in Micah. Well, then we come to Nahum. Since we have seen, Nahum deals with another argument which comes along mostly then to the practitioner, not so much to the patient. Namely, the argument where error says, You know, you have now a very tough nut to crack. Where Eros says, I know that you think that truth is powerful over everywhere, but I'm going to give you such a hard nut to crack and you will just bite out your teeth. You just can't crack it, you see. Can you say bite out your teeth? Break your teeth. We say bite out in German. So it is that here, all those arguments which come to the practitioner and say, well, this time you may not succeed. They are very subtle arguments and say, you know, the name of this problem is so-and-so and it's Nineveh, the maximum of evil. And that's too big for you. So one has to break that down. One can't break it down by just saying no. One only can break it down with a higher power and with higher authority than just saying. And that higher authority is always by going back to God and say, well, what does God say about it? After all, we are not working out of our own power. But all what we are doing is that we see and know how God is working and how God is refuting the arguments of mortal mind. We ourselves cannot refute the arguments of mortal mind. With what authority would we do that? The we is just the mortal. All the I there is God's ego. Only that I, that we, can do it. And that we is principle and idea. So, therefore, Nahum comes and is a very great comfort to a practitioner. Time and time again, when things seem to get hard and not so easy, well, it is because there is something somewhere in mentality which says, error can resist the working of truth. Error has enough arguments to back out. And so Nahum tackles these arguments. What are the arguments? And so we can just go over it and see, well, God is mind. And therefore mind always comes to every situation, to every problem, as the only law there is. Therefore, evil cannot act according to law, and unlawfulness cannot succeed. Because mind is the only law, and that law alone is the law, and therefore only successful lawfulness of error cannot succeed. It's impossible. Then we begin to see that spirit has a Christ and comes to any argument and says, only that which is of the nature of spirit and therefore only that which is good can survive. And evil cannot survive because evil says, oh, you know, the good goes always down and evil will be always successful. So it breaks that argument. Breaks that argument that any evil, if it is disease or if it is a situation or anything, that it can succeed. So spirit makes a consciousness, a constant consciousness of spirit and its Christ operation, makes it quite impossible for us to believe in that error that evil can succeed. Then he goes on to soul and shows that soul has a Christ and constantly comes to each one of us as the definiteness of soul, as that soul which brings everything into balance and makes everything quite clear and therefore brings light into every favorene, interlaced ambiguities of being, you see, and just sorts things out. Until error can no more hide itself behind any subtlety, behind any veil, behind any hedge of thorns, as he uses the symbolism. And so he also shows that principle says, I am a fact in being, and I am a divine fact, and I am a Christ, and therefore I can come to any situation and break down that argument which says, because error is organized scientifically and on the worldwide way, or on even a universal way or a collective way, it can't be broken. Evil says, I have a system, I have an organization, there is, wherever you attack it, all the other ones support it and make a fence around it and make a bulwark around it. Wherever you attack organized evil, you will meet a multitude of evil, so you can't do a thing to it. Well, in that situation, we just can't say, well, I can't do a thing about it. I just have to go back to principle and see that principle as a foundation, that principle as a system, and that in that system, every idea works together for the whole of that system, for the establishment of the true idea of God, and so I don't need to fear any organized evil. And so it's the same as with life. Life is shown there as life that has a Christ and that comes to each one of us as the true idea of the one life, as the divine life, as which is the only life, and which breaks down the belief which says, you know, the divine life is not a successful life. The human life is a successful life. The life of the materialist is a successful life. You must be like those little lions in the den who just have always their prey and who gather together from all the empires everything they can crash together and gather it together and become big and become proud and become rich and become this and become that. That is life. And against that argument, really, we can only break down when we sit back and look at life itself. Say, what is really life? Is materiality life? Is gathering wealth life? Is gathering titles life? Is gathering position and career life? Or is God life? And so little by little something breaks within us that begins to see, oh, it's only an argument of evil that wants to show me quite a different picture of what true life is. Then he shows truth that constantly comes to us as the only truth there is, and therefore as the only Savior and Counselor and Comforter. Is there no Comforter in thee, in Nineveh? He said. He said, no, there isn't. Because truth says, you know, if I come and deal with error, then error has no chance to back out and say, all right, if you hit me, I will always find the back door where I get it again. I find the Savior, I find a way out, I find a solution again for me. And so that's why then evil can crop up again and crop up again. You say crop up?
Yes.
Yes. Again and again. And truth says, no, I'm whole. I'm the wholeness of truth, the entirety of truth. And I am the only Comforter, and I am the only Savior. There is no other way out. And so he shows there in Nahum, that no city, not even that great, no Ammon in Upper Egypt was able to withstand the attacks. And so also will Nineveh fall. And then only we get our peace and our inward rest. Then we have when we have silenced within us all those arguments, you see, which say, I wonder if truth is really all-powerful, or if evil has not somewhere a little chance. And so at the end he shows that love, a true sense of love, the all-embracing sense of love, just doesn't leave anything in it which still can raise its voice. All the inhabitants of Nineveh, its princes, its kings, they slumber, the merchants are scattered, the people is scattered, and their place was known no more. It's a state of consciousness. It's a state of consciousness which is not just bestowed on us graciously as a present one day, but it's a state of consciousness which is cultured and cultured within us to the point where we accept that all-inclusiveness of love, that mercy of love, that grace of love, where we just see well in the one and only consciousness, there is no enemy. Their place is found no more. But in order to stay there, Habakkuk comes and says, you know, in order to stay there, you have to be aware that you are not weighing things on the plane of seeming, but only on the plane of being. So Habakkuk is that important, most important prophet who talks to the practitioner, just as well as to the patient, and tells him, you see, your whole practice and treatment is something which does not first want to have its confirmation in the material, but first must stay and rest in the spiritual consciousness and spiritual evidence, that you first have to go up on the tower, on the watchtower, and look out and be aware from that high standpoint what's going on. You can't look with your eyes and see what the world is doing and then judge by it if God is alive or not. But that you must have faith, and who has faith lives. We live by faith. And faith there is as the meaning in the Hebrew text, not the same meaning as in the epistles. It is just allegiance to principle, to God. So he says, just stay on the throne, just stay with God, and stay with God, and then you will live. Then you will see that even if it doesn't happen at once, he says, just wait, it will surely come to pass. It will surely come to pass. But don't leave that standpoint. Don't leave that standpoint.